Into the Weird, Episode 31. Even a Demiurge has urges.
Welcome to Into the Weird, a podcast celebrating the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I'm your host, Billy D, and alongside me is my co-host, Herman Lowe. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Billy, I'm great. Thanks, Ben. Glad to be back. And how are you?
I am really good. Back to work after a vacation, you know, a little holiday there. But, you know, back to work's not great. But getting to record kind of helps you get through the day, so...
That's right.
Good.
Man, I saw your pics. You guys went traveling, and I got to say, some beautiful scenery. A lot of lighthouses. How do you like, explain that to me? Because when I think about lighthouses, I think horror. I think The Ring. You know, I think the fog. Horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
You guys love the lighthouses.
Well, that's I think they're okay. That's my wife's big thing. She loves them absolutely, but yeah, she doesn't look at them in a horror way. But oh yeah, I do
not.
Too. I did have one pick where it was shrouded in fog.
Oh
yeah,
that's what I was going to mention. Dude, that's what I was going to mention. Is if I have your permission, can I put that picture on the podcast addendum post on sinkintotheweird.com just to show listeners? That was an amazing pick, man. I remember when I saw that, I was like, holy crap. You know what it made me think of, since, you know, you and I are both horror-minded? You know that Japanese horror creator, Junji Ito? You know, he writes and draws. He's an amazing artist. Uzumaki, you know, his seminal work, I think people would agree, would be Uzumaki. There's this chapter involving this lighthouse. Damn, that pick you showed me, it made me think of the fog. Adrienne Barbeau. Didn't she have a birthday recently?
Oh, yeah.
I think she did.
Oh, yeah.
And The Fog, you know, one of our favorite John Carpenter movies. And then, obviously, Uzumaki. So, man, that was a good pick. I'm going to post it for you listeners, and then you could have a look for yourself.
Yeah, that was a good one because you could not see the lighthouse from the shoreline. And it's not terribly far out, either. It's not one of those ones that's, you know, a half mile out in the ocean. So you went walking out on this concrete slab and it goes straight, and then it takes a 90 degree 45 degree angle left, and you had to like literally go halfway out that till you saw it. Yeah, so some good picks there.
You know what this just reminded me of as well, Billy? Do you remember one of our Morbius discussions during our Halloween episode? We talked about lighthouses.
Oh,
you remember during the Vampire
Lighthouse
Tales
of the Possessed?
That's right. Oh man, lots of lighthouses. It's actually kind of a horror trope by now, right? They should have a horror sub-genre called lighthouse horror or something, like they do with eyeball trauma horror.
Yeah, for real.
Dude, so listen, you picked a great issue to discuss this time around. Listeners, I think you're going to enjoy this episode because we're talking about a character we've never actually touched upon, but yet he's one of our favorites. And if you think about it, Billy, there's a lot of weirdness in his history in his storyline, if you can put it like that. Depending on the writer, of course. And this character we're specifically talking about is the Mighty Thor. You know, we've talked about him before in terms of the MCU, you know, when you and I discussed, you know, the Marvel movies we liked or didn't like from him, featuring him. but we've never actually gone, you know, in depth into discussing the character of Thor. But, you know, I know you have a massive collection of Thor comics. I have a huge collection. Thor is one of the series I collected since I was a kid, straight through to, you know, very recently. And I only recently, after Jason Aaron wrapped up his run, I stopped picking up Thor comics. But, you know, I'd say since probably 1986 or 1987, I've collected all the Thor comics. Yeah, you know, ever since, you know, comics became easier to get, I should say, that's when I started collecting Thor. And, of course, I picked up lots of back issues, you know, to fill up the 1970s run. And now I want to ask you, Billy, dude, you're a big Thor fan. I'm a big Thor fan. How did you, like, what is your memories of Thor as a young man? How did you first get to like the character?
Well, the first time I got to Thor was because of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. There was an episode with Thor and
right,
Loki.
Right. Okay. Yeah, lots of people lots of people got you know, introduced to Marvel characters through that show, you know, our age, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not me specifically, because like I mentioned on a previous episode, we didn't really have that. I think we got that much a little bit later than you guys, you know, maybe in the mid-80s or something. But I know that was early 80s, wasn't it? Maybe even late 70s.
81, I think, yeah.
Oh, okay.
81, 82, yeah.
That's how you got into the Thor. Interesting. I didn't know that. Yeah, I don't. He's one of those characters that I don't remember exactly how I started liking him. I've always liked him, and I've always picked up comics, even when I was young, of him. You know what I mean? So there was a comic, a Thor comic or two, in, you know, my original collection of comics gifted to me, you know, by a family member. There was a Thor in there. I don't remember how many, and I don't remember which issue, but I remember distinctly that I wanted to fly with a hammer, you know, by hurling a hammer or pointing it up to the sky. Most often one of my dad's, you know, ball peen hammers or something from his tool shed. But, you know, I remember loving that part of Thor. And I think the earliest, you know, issues that I read of his was probably the Eternal Saga, you know, that part of the, you know, Thor run. So
great stuff.
Great, man. We got to talk about that too. I think we mentioned a couple of months ago. We were going to talk about that. And, but you know, that's not exactly weird. It's not weird material. It's pretty straightforward storytelling. It's very serious, very epic.
Yep.
So normally we focus on weird issues. Now, this issue that you've picked, Billy, I'll let you talk about it more, but this is very weird for Thor, because there's some pretty crazy stuff happening, and I think our listeners are going to understand soon why we picked a character not normally associated with weirdness, but we picked him. So we're going to get into that. So, Billy, give us more detail. What is this Thor issue you've selected for this week?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever wish you could sip cocktails and discuss great books with your friends while hanging out in a rundown piano bar? Here on the Literary Guys podcast, that's what we do. I'm Dr. Gordon McCallan.
And I'm author Zachary Kellyan. Each month, we discuss books from two different views of modern masculinity.
From both a gay
and a straight perspective.
From To Kill a Mockingbird
to future governors in the jungle trying to kill a predator. We welcome everyone to join our conversation on the good and toxic of what literature and pop culture have to say about masculinity. So pour yourself a drink and join us now for Season 3.
Literary Guys. That's G-U-I-S-E. LiteraryGuys.com.
I see what you did there.
This is Thor Annual number 10 from 1982, and 37-page epic, it says on the cover, and you see Thor struggling against some creature, and it's really cool because this one came out of nowhere. The first time I read this, I wasn't very steeped in Marvel mythology and, you know, how everything kind of happened with the universe and gods and things like that. So for a while, this was like, you know, my Bible, if you will, for the Marvel Universe, for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you mean, because if you encounter this issue, you know, first, before you know the rest of the, you know, other writers, I should say, interpretation of the creation myth. You know, like, let's say, for instance, we've spoken about, you know, Brunner and Engelhart and CZ Neig. Let's say you encountered that comic first, then you would think, oh, that's how the Marvel Universe started. Not the Marvel Universe in comics. I mean, the actual creation myth that people in Marvel should believe. Only Doctor Strange knows about it. Which could be in line with what we're seeing here, Billy. But basically, this issue contains the creation myth of everything and of the gods, specifically in Marvel, you know, all the pantheons, which Thor has encountered numerous times during his adventures, right? He's fought Set, you know, he's fought the Indian gods, you know, he's fought alongside, of course, Hercules, the Olympians. So, you know, we're going to have some very interesting characters show up here. So, oh, Billy, give us some more specs about this issue.
Okay, so this one was written by Alan Zelenitz. He was the scripter and co-plotter, and then it was also co-plotted by the editor, Mark Grunewald, who you and I both know. He's, you know, continuity cop there and big Captain America run. And then the penciler was Bob Hall, who I don't have a ton of his work, but what I do have, I like quite a bit. And then for some reason, there was an entire army of inkers on this one. Rick Bryant, Joe Rubenstein, Andy Mashinsky, Al Gordon, and Kevin Zuban.
Wow.
So not sure if they were just running late with this one, so it had to get passed off. But honestly, for having 5 different inkers, it doesn't look too bad. Like, it's still pretty consistent, so I'll have to give them their due there. And then Rick Parker letters, George Russo's colorist. So there you go.
Yeah, man, I love the art on this issue. I'm a Bob Hall fan. When he draws specific characters that I like, of course, and his rendering of Thor was pretty great. He'll never be John Buscema, right, Billy, to me. It's weird. Like, John Buscema is my favorite, you know, Avengers artist, and he's also my favorite Thor artist. He's my favorite Conan artist, so it's kind of hard to beat Big John. But, you know, I like it when he draws these muscular, you know, old world types, you know, barbarians or gods. I think John excels at that. But Bob Hall, very competent. You know, he even has a little bit of a Buscema look sometimes to his characters, you know. And so, you know, this era of Thor was great. Great art. And Zelenitz and Grunewald, of course, they're good scripters. You know, I think I might be more of a Doug Munch and Keith Pollard fan. You know, I think during this time, they were the creative team on Thor at this point in time, you know, maybe just a little bit before, maybe a little bit after too, right, Billy? Doug Munch.
Yeah.
Now, normally we associate Doug Munch with non-superhero writing. I mean, Moon Knight is a superhero, but I think a more like a horror character, he became more like that. And of course, Doug Munch scripted Master of Kung Fu for a long time. But, you know, he's very impressive as a superhero writer as well. So this is some great writing, though, comparing itself to Munch and Keith Pollard's stuff, you know, Bob Hall on art, and then, like you say, Zelenitz and Grunewald. So, Billy, now you've prepared the synopsis. Now, listeners, this is about to get really bizarre here, because this are you going to go into the complete, in the synopsis, Billy, are you going to go into detail here? Because it's going to be difficult.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to go too crazy, because I think you and I will be better off just talking about it loosely. So it's only like a couple paragraphs, and I'm not going to go into what happens after. I'm going to stop as the quote-unquote heroes are going to face down this specific monster. Mm. Yeah, so once they get to that point, then I'm going to stop, and you and I can just start from the beginning with how we felt about it, and then we can spoil the ending, which, you know, it's not much of a spoiler, but it's still pretty cool. So that's how I'm going to handle it.
Right. Yeah, that's the best, dude. I think that's for the best. Okay, let's do this.
All right. The book begins with the creation of the universe and Earth itself. We see the beginnings of life in the form of the Elder Gods, Chthon, Gaia, Set, and many others. These gods war with each other. Then, Gaia descends to the depths and somehow helps create a creature named Atum. This very powerful entity rises to the surface and absorbs most of the Elder Gods, then disappears. Fast forward to present-day Asgard, and after a funeral, we see the evildoers of the Marvel U conspiring together. Loki, Hela, Pluto, Mephisto, they're all here. They join hands and chant, then a portal opens. They are stunned at the sight of Demogorge, the God Eater. He absorbs all of them except Hela, who runs for her life. One of Odin's ravens observes this and tells him about the God Eater. And so he sends Thor, along with the good pantheon of gods, to face down the God Eater. All right, buddy. Let's start with the cover. What did you think of this one?
Okay, man. This cover is, I wouldn't say it's one of my favorites, but it's definitely very striking because of this creature, you know, that was was rendered. You know, it's, you've got Thor standing on the palm of this creature, and the palm has this type of aperture which is slowly absorbing Thor, and this creature looks like the blob with eyes, you know, the blob from the movie, and then it's got pimples all over its face, and the pimples are the shapes of, or these nodules, but I'm calling them pimples, they're the the faces, the pimples are the faces of the people it's recently absorbed, in this case the gods. We will find out later who exactly, but yeah, it's basically the champions of the gods and the death gods that it's already absorbed. Thor's obviously the last, you know, save the best for last. And so I quite like this cover, Billy, and then, you know, in the clutches of the God Eater. And then you've got, you know, a plus, for the first time, a map of Asgard. Now, that's pretty cool. I remember when I picked this issue up as a kid, I was, like, excited for this map of Asgard. And then, you know, I was a little bit disappointed in the map because I had seen other maps at that point in time and I was expecting a different map. I never saw, you know, the Nine Realms like bordering each other. I saw them in more like a vertical kind of, you know, kind of plane.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you know, at the bottom you've got, you know, Hela's domain, and then at the top you've got Asgard. No, this is more like just a map of the Hyborian Age, even.
Yeah, they kind of make everything revolve around Asgard. That's kind of like right in the middle, then everything revolves around that. But yeah, I understand what you're saying for sure. This looks like just, I don't want to say a generic map, but kind of that you would just find of, you know, in an encyclopedia, not anything really, you know, super cool and very detailed. And like you said, it's just more of a map of, you know, you'd find of Earth instead of a realm, where all these realms that are supposed to be like, you know, out in the beyond.
That's right. It's a geographical map. So, you know, but very interesting, though. They put a lot of thought into this issue, right, Billy? There's even a glossary at the end, a glossary with Norse mythology terms and locations and characters. So I like that glossary. I remember as a kid I read up on this, but even then I had already read some mythology, and then I knew that there's a lot of fiction. Well, of course all mythology is fiction, but you know, there's a lot of ideas that the writers, their own ideas that they put in there, which is great. You know, I like it. It's very creative if you think about it, what Zelenitz and Grunewald came up with here. So the cover is pretty great. Billy, what do you think about the cover though?
I like it. It could be a lot better. No offense to Mr. Rubenstein. I think a better inker may have, you know, got a little more finely detailed with the monster, because Thor looks fine, but, you know, the monster and those pimples, as you refer to them, are a little like, I don't know, just not really digging the shading and how they're kind of like, they just look like they were just plopped on there, not that they're coming out, you know? Because this creature, like, when this happens, it does look like that inside the comic as well, but in the comic, it looks a little more like maybe like John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yes, that creature,
that was this year too, wasn't it? 82? Like,
True.
Like when that creature has all those like dog heads and people inside it, and it's all like, wah! That's kind of what it looks like inside, but on the cover, it's just, it looks like they just like cut out little pictures of these people and like pasted them on the creature.
Yeah, no, that's true. You know, yeah, that's why I said it's not the greatest cover.
Yeah.
I like the fact that, you know, Thor is facing, you know, a monster that looks more, you know, blob-like than his usual foes. You know, normally Thor's foes are more blocky and muscular and you know, they're more traditional type mythological monsters. This monster, though, it looks like something out of a Conan comic, you know. But I, you know, it's a little bit Lovecraftian if you think about it, Billy. But the origin is not at all, you know, Lovecraftian. we'll get into that just now. Now, Billy, there are a couple of things that I'm going to mention right away that I learned from this issue. Even as a kid, but it didn't completely dawn on me. It obviously happened with subsequent rereadings of this issue. Is that, you know, Asgard, you know, it employs slave labor. In fact, it enslaves the storm giants or the frost giants or whomever. It employs them as slaves. I mean, we've got this one panel of this huge giant like doing some manual labor for the Asgardians. I never knew that, but it kind of makes a weird kind of sense, right?
Yeah.
And then another thing that, you know, if you've read Thor before this annual, then you realize something that this monster, now this is going to freak people out, but we'll get into that once we progress through the discussion. This monster is technically Thor's half-brother. Now, yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit later. But yeah, technically it's Thor's half-brother. So Billy, now there's this the first page where you've got these four panels of the Earth being born. You know, they say the Earth came from the sun, you know, and then, you know, there was the biosphere of the Earth became rich with the potential for life, and this biosphere released a sort of life energy that coalesced into this being called the Demiurge, right? So the Demiurge is basically the creator of all the gods, you know, basically, because let's say in Greek mythology you would call him Uranus, or in Norse Roman mythology we'll call him Uranus, you know, the sky father of the who eventually gave birth to, through Gaia, you know, gave birth to the Titans. Well most of the Titans were actually her children. This is let's say Uranus, or I don't know how you pronounce him in Greek, but Uranus in Roman mythology, giving birth to the gods. So basically he just, you know, lashed the Earth with these pink lightning bolts, and then it caused some abiogenesis to occur, and life sprang from the primordial ooze. But this was not life in terms of, you know, mortal life, right? But these were gods being born from the soil of the Earth itself, you know, galvanized by these pink lightning bolts. So, Billy, who are these gods? I mean, there's many of them, but we've got three very, you know, recognizable ones showing up.
Yeah, that's a really cool panel. It says, engendering the first forms of ethereal life which sprang full grown from the ground. So not babies here. These things just pop up out of the ground. And the three that are in the forefront, like I said in the synopsis, Set, Gaia, and Chthon. And he looks really scary. I like the way he's drawn there. He looks awesome. I love that guy.
Yeah. Chthon is technically supposed to be, I mean, he's the writer, or would you call it a writer? I'm not sure.
The author
of the Darkhold, you know. Eventually we'll learn why he wrote the Darkhold. But he's supposed to be the Marvel's version of Cthulhu. You know, Billy, the name Chthon is taken from Cthulhu, but he's not. He doesn't look like Cthulhu at all. He's more humanoid looking. He looks like a dark elf, or this gray, rocky, dark elf with these, you know, spiked ears and red eyes and these claws for hands. So he's suitably evil looking. It's just not the way I envisioned Chthon. You know, because there was this one Spider-Woman issue where Spider-Woman gets drawn into, I think she was fighting Viper at the time, you know, the Viper, the villain, villainess. Yeah. And Viper sort of, she had she was touched by the power of Chthon and the Darkhold, and she blasted Spider-Woman into this realm where Chthon is lying at the bottom of an abyss. Yeah, right, Billy? So Spider-Woman plummets into this abyss, and then you see Chthon, and basically what he looks like is, he looks like just one single giant eye, almost like Shuma Gorath, but he's this eye is in this black pool. So I always associated him with some, you know, formless. He's a formless being. I didn't really think of him as this humanoid looking guy, but apparently he is.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think, well, we're going to see in the story here, he sometimes resides in another, like, dimension, I guess we would say. And I guess, you know, you think in that Spider-Woman story, maybe, you know, it was like a, what do they call it, like a scrying pool or something like that, where, you know, he's in this other dimension and that's how you would communicate with him, maybe, something like that. But, oh, yeah, that page is awesome. And I love how, you know, Gaia, of course, is buck naked walking around. And then you have the serpent Set, who is just, he's just standing there looking all pissed off. And then the next panel starts using his like volcanic breath to blast the living crap out of some of these other demons that are just like walking around minding their own business. And he starts cooking them.
Yeah, exactly. Now, these are what are known as the Elder Gods, right? I believe they came, they were the first race of gods. So they're older than the Greek and the Norse pantheons that we know now. But you're right, this is the actual Set in Marvel continuity who would show up in the, you know, Conan comics. And this is also the Set that Thor would eventually battle as well. Thor would sometimes, I think this already happened in this continuity, he would assist the Egyptian gods in battling Set. Sometimes, you know, in the comics, because Thor's sort of, I love those issues of Thor where he crosses over to other pantheons and to the mythological realms of rival pantheons. Oh, yeah. Those are great. And so, like you say, there's a war, right? Immediately, a war breaks out between these elder gods. And then Gaia was the only one who didn't participate in this war. And this is why she's called Mother Earth. She shepherded the other forms of life that was a result of the Demiurge's power. And this is the early, life forms that showed up in the oceans. You know, the trilobites, the amoebas, the plankton here, and the bacteria. And she was shepherding that form of life, sort of guiding their evolution, which would eventually lead to the development of, you know, sentient beings and us, man, and mankind. So it's an interesting idea. But then Gaia made a little bit of whoopee with the Demiurge, the father of the gods, because what happens on the next page, Billy?
Oh, this is insane. It shows her, you know, ascending into the depths, you know. And then it says, she meditated upon how she might bring good to the world she loved, and in her yearning summoned the Demiurge itself to conceive in her a force for good. And it shows her laying, like, on the rocks, and of course there's a rock, you know, covering her woman parts.
Yeah.
But then there's this Demiurge with, like, this dude's face with this blinding light. And it's kind of looking like, you know, like right down there, like the doctor was when he's delivering the baby. It's like, whoa, what is this creep doing? It looks really kind of a bit awkward.
Yeah, man, that's Immaculate Conception. The Immaculate Conception I never wanted to see rendered on the page.
Yeah, he impregnates her, basically.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, kaboom, this hand comes blasting through the rock. And it's not from out of her like a normal baby, but out of the rock by her, I guess, or underneath her or whatever. And it says, a tomb was born. And you see this buck naked, buff, bald guy. It's kind of like Mr. Clean, except he's naked and he's like orange. And it says, a tomb, first of the new generation of gods whose power was the awesome energy of the blazing sun.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's supposed to be golden, but, you know, they rendered him with an orange hue. You're right, so it's strange. But, you know, it's an interesting scene, because this is what happened in Greek mythology. You know, Gaia mated with the sky father, Uranus, and then, you know, she gave birth to the Titans. And you know, this is basically that. But, you know, they've tweaked it a bit, because it seems that the first creature born to Gaia was this Atum guy. Now, the reason Gaia said she wanted to conceive a force for good is because Atum is technically there to clean house, right, Billy? He's going to take out all these warring elder gods who are destroying the earth, laying waste to it with their endless wars. And first he does so as himself, right, as the sun. He uses the power of the sun to absorb or he uses, you know, his own unique power to absorb the elder gods into himself. The only problem is they're so damn evil that once he takes them into his being, he absorbs them in the form of energy. He sort of morphs into this evil creature himself, this blob like John Carpenter, the Thing kind of creature, like you mentioned, right? But except with wings. It basically looks like a gargoyle, but a shapeless mass where the torso is supposed to be, with wings.
And yeah, he almost looks like Juggernaut with wings, and then
yeah,
kind like of all these other faces jammed in there. But yeah, what Gaia and Demiurge, they basically created a nuke so they could just start over.
Yeah, they could. I think Demiurge was, you know, ambivalent towards the whole situation. He just wanted to to impregnate Gaia and have some have his way with her. Yeah,
but horny.
But Gaia, she had a plan, you know, and she wanted to save the Earth to protect this, you know, these early life forms that she was sort of shepherding. So she wanted to clean house, and she did that with her son Atum. But she didn't understand that, you know, once released, it is very much like nuclear power, right? Billy, this is like they're unable to control it. And most of the gods were absorbed, most of the elder gods, who look like demons, except for C'thon and Gaia. Gaia and C'thon, and Set. Set also survived. But C'thon and Gaia, well, C'thon had a plan. He would basically, you know, create another dimension or enter another dimension. But before he did so, he wanted to leave a link to this dimension. And that's when he created the Darkhold, which is just this piece of parchment, right, Billy? In its true form, it's this piece of this infinite parchment or scroll. And we can see there's a panel of him inscribing it. And then Gaia just looking on. So he uses that to escape from Demo Gorge, which is what Atum has now become. Demo Gorge, the God Eater. So I love stuff like this. If you get a force, if you introduce a force that is powerful enough to take out gods, you know, like in the recent Jason Aaron Thor comics, you've got the God Butcher. You know, I love stuff like that, because then you know that there's a power that's been introduced which even the gods cannot handle. So now speak about this, Billy. What happens here?
Well, yeah, just as the Demo Gorge God Eater creature is about to grab C'thon, he, you know, transports to this other dimension, and then it says his task is at last complete. Demo Gorge rose up into the skies, and then he says he casts the forms and energy from his body, seeding the heavens with God stuff. So basically, he just blasts off all this, you know, spirits of the ones that he grabbed, all the elder gods, and blasts them into like the sun and the sky and stuff like that. And then he takes off. But then it says, eons passed, and Earth's highest physical life form, man, came into being. And then here we see, you know, man being born, and then the gods of, like you said, they're Roman and Greek, and Asgardian, like all those gods being born, and them kind of like coming into power, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Now, this is a good part of the creation myth here that Zelenitz and Grunewald are introducing, but I like this because this is in line with the fact that the gods that we see in different pantheons reflect the cultures that worship them. Because in fact, here it's established, much like it's established across the board, even in DC, if you read comics like The Sandman from Neil Gaiman, that gods only they only gain power or shape from the humans who conceive of them, right? So at this point in time, when this god stuff was floating around in that Atum had released from his body, the humans were already developing. You know, we had already gained, you know, our modern day, you know, minds. And so we started to conceive of, you know, or ask questions of how the universe came into being. And because of that, we started formulating theories and ideas. And most of these ideas took the shape of gods, you know. So that's how these early humans explained thunder. They explained it by creating a god of thunder or creating a god of the sky like Zeus or, you know, something like that. So, and that then the god stuff coalesced into this actual, you know, person or into this actual god mm-hmm. based off of the mm-hmm. humans believing in them. That's why we have different pantheons in the Marvel Universe, etc. And so, you know, all of these different cultures created their own gods and, you know, shaped them with their collective consciousness into these beings. So that makes, I mean, it doesn't make sense, obviously, but, you know, in terms of comics, it does, because this explains a lot, like Billy, right? Like,
mm-hmm, and yeah.
It's also the central plot, actually, of this comic, because the gods are losing their power because humans are not believing in them anymore.
Yeah, Alan Zelenitz, the way he scripts it, the box says, "And thus came to be all the gods of earthly legend, great pantheons of diverse divinity, given substance by the demiurge, given form by the mind of man." Mm. And then, you know, like I said, that's when we just kick right into the funeral in Asgard, which is from another story, Thor book. So we don't need to talk about that too much. But there's, you know, Odin's presiding over this funeral and everybody's all sad. It's real, like, you know, it looks very Kirby-esque, that splash page. And then, you know, all of a sudden they're just like, "Hey, wait a minute. Usually when somebody dies, Hela's creeping around. Where's she at?" And that's when we start to go into the whole shenanigans of her being with all these other maniacs.
That's right. Yeah, the funeral is for Nanna, you know, the wife of Baldur, and Baldur being Thor's BFF. You know, he's suitably sad and Thor feels it, you know. And then you've got a couple of gods thinking about, you know, Nanna dying, because obviously, Billy, gods don't often perish, right? They don't often die here. So this is a solemn occasion. Loki thinks, you know, about divorce. He says, yeah, if only my own wife, Sigane, would take Nanna's lead and free Loki from the hated bonds of matrimony. That's what he thinks. Uh-huh. You know, so he's enjoying this funeral. And then you've got, you know, Frigga, you know, she's crying for Odin because Odin apparently cannot cry. And, you know, mm-hmm. then there's this, I like this funeral, you know, Heimdall, even on the bridge, he laments the fact that he cannot join because he has to be ever vigilant. And then you see the slave labor happening, right, where these storm giants have to pull the ship.
Yeah.
And then, Billy, the funeral is great because, you know, like the Vikings used to have this funeral pyre on one of the long ships, and then they would launch it into the bay or wherever, into the ocean near their village, and then they would shoot an arrow to set it alight. Now, this is basically the Viking funeral, except Thor is the last to remain on this longboat, and he calls down the lightning to set mm-hmm. the pyre alight, and, you know, that's Nana's funeral pyre.
And I guess they didn't have matches or anything in Asgard.
Hey, you don't need matches when you can just, like, call
down.
Yeah,
I mean, if Thor wasn't around, I don't know what, rub two sticks together, maybe they would have done, I don't know.
they would still be cavemen.
Boy Scouts.
Cavemen gods. Well, actually, that's a bit unfair towards cavemen, because after all, they did have fire. Some of them did, so I apologize to all of our ancestors. But there's this great scene where the Valkyries sort of shepherd Nana's spirit off to Valhalla. Now, this mm-hmm. again is in line with mythology. Valhalla and Asgard are two separate domains. You know, mm-hmm. so Valhalla is where the spirits of the brave go for their ultimate reward. Now, I wasn't aware gods could go there, but apparently in the mm-hmm. Marvel Universe, yes, dead gods also go to Valhalla. And then, Billy, this is one part on the beach where Thor picks up this giant stone that probably only he could pick up, right? Only he could heft this massive stone. It must weigh like 40 or 50 tons.
And yeah, it looks like a monolith of some kind.
Yeah, it's a monument to Nanna. You know, mm-hmm. They set it on the beach. And there seems to be a couple of others. Obviously, there's been some gods, you know, dying in the past. And then we see mm-hmm. the longboat burning and sinking in the bay. Did you see in that panel?
Yeah.
And, you know, it looks like a skeletal dragon, you know, dying in a mm-hmm. conflagration there. And Thor hefting this giant stone and placing it on the beach as a sort of a monument to Nanna, to her memory. And mm-hmm. then, you know, Billy, we cut to the real meat of this issue. This is great. There is a meeting, a meeting in the underworld, a meeting of the death gods. Now, Billy, this is great. You already mentioned some of them. We've got Mephisto, mm-hmm. We've got, you know, Sith. We've got Pluto. We've got, of course, Hela, Ereshkigal, you know, the Babylonian death gods. And they're all meeting. But why? Why are they having this meeting?
Well, they're basically having a meeting to say, hey, let's, like, join forces together to, you know, conquer more. And it's funny, Hela is the first one to speak up and basically say this is a bad idea. And she has this very eloquent, you know, statement that makes sense and any reasonable person would listen to. And Pluto's response is, bah, you speak like a trembling coward, Hela.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, really? That's the best you got? And of course, she turns out to be right. She says this is going to be a grievous error.
Yeah, exactly, man. Essentially, their plan is to merge all of their separate hells into one giant hell so that they can share the denizens of hell. The humans who go to hell essentially are becoming less and less, and that is causing them to lose power, right, Billy? So whereas the, let's call them the sky gods or the gods of good, they gain their power from worship. The death gods gain their power from the dead entering their realms. You know, so with less dead entering these realms, because less of the people who die believe in these gods, so they don't go to their separate hells, you know, they're losing power, so they want to, you know, merge their realms. Basically, it's like companies, you know, you know, like businesses merging, you know, to become stronger and bigger. This is what they want to do, and Hela knows that this is going to lead to disaster, because she recently tried to take over Valhalla. And she was defeated. So now she possesses some humility, right, Billy?
Oh, yeah. Then we get some sexism from Pluto there.
Oh, man. What's up with him? Yeah.
I know. And then Ereshkigal kind of is like, listen, clown, this has nothing to do with her being a woman.
Yeah.
She has experience with this. So maybe you ought to listen to her. And everybody else just kind of falls in line with Pluto. So yeah. Then she's just like, all right, I told you not to do it, but whatever.
Yeah, and then they all hold hands in this type of seance, but it's not. They're calling down their respective powers to merge their realms. And this is what causes all the trouble, right, Billy? Because this is an unnatural occurrence, at least as far as the destiny of gods goes. Because this is not supposed to happen until Ragnarok or maybe later even. This is basically an event that causes the Demogorgon to be reborn, or to reconceive himself. Actually, he's always in the wings, waiting around, right, Billy? Because he essentially banished himself as a tomb.
Yeah,
you know, after he absorbed those evil gods, but this time around, the Demogorgon, you know, he comes to put these gods in line, but he's not just going to stop there. He's decided, okay, this is basically the Ragnarok for all gods, because you know, they've done this terrible thing of merging the separate hells. So he's here to basically just absorb them all, and you know, the death gods are first on the menu, but the rest of the pantheons are going to follow. So Billy, we immediately see some of his power here, because Seth, you know, the death god of the Egyptian mythology here at this point in time, he blasts, you know, he releases his power, tries to blast the Demogorgon, but it's nothing. And he just gets sucked into this horrible little mouth in his palm. The Demogorgon's palm just absorbs Seth. Schluck.
Well, I love that when even the panel right above that, where he kind of comes out of this portal or whatever happens, they open a portal by mistake or whatever, and Demogorgon comes out of it, and he's really scary looking in that one panel. And then Mephisto points at him and says, "What misshapen monstrosity is this?" And Demogorgon says, "I was born a tomb, first among gods, but in this form I am Demogorgon. My purpose is to destroy you degenerate forms. Release your godly energies." And then that's when Seth flips out and tries to blast him, and he gets, like I said, absorbed, eaten, whatever you want to call it, in that bottom panel. Oh, is that creepy?
Oh, that is creepy, man, especially when Seth's face shows up as this tumor or this bulge in the Demogorgon's shoulder. Damn.
That's awful.
Yeah, it really looks bad. And you know that little mouth in his hand that he uses to absorb the gods? It sort of puckers up a little bit after that. You know, it looks a little bit like I don't know, like a weird little navel, or even like an anus. It's like horrible.
I was just gonna say a back door.
Yeah, it does look like that. Oh, it's gross, man. And then, you know, they all release their powers, right, Billy, at the same time, trying to slay this Demogorgon. But that just fuels him. It seems to empower him, and he absorbs a couple more gods. So now, and then Mephisto, he tries to use brute force. You know, along with this god Apucht, I think he's the Inca or the Mayan death god Apucht, or
like a skeleton guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the skeleton, and they try to hold on to the Demogorgon's arms. They essentially reckon that they could rip off his limbs and so stunt his power, because he seems to be absorbing the gods through his hands, right? So he just hurls them away like gnats. You know, and then Mephisto even squeezes. Oh man, that's a great panel.
And then we see a raven swooping around, like checking things out, and then it flies off. And yeah, then all we have left is Hela, and who else is there with her?
Hela and Ereshkigal is still left.
Yeah,
and they're fleeing.
That's it. The two women, because of all the stupid men, all like, "Whoa, use brute force, okay, dummies." And then they're the only ones alive, and they're like, "Let's get out of here." They're really smart about it.
Yeah, but you know, this is not going to last, because you know they're in dire straits. They need some help. Odin though has sent one of his ravens, Hugin, right? Hugin and Munin are his two ravens, but one of his ravens, he sent them to Hel to see where the hell Hela was, because she's supposed to have shown up at the funeral. You know, she's the goddess of death, but she wasn't there. So Odin sent his raven to go looking for her. The raven whispers in his ear, and Odin realizes a god eater, right? Even the All-Father knew not of the existence of such a being. You know,
yeah,
so
this is great. Panels are great. When the raven flies over and is like whispering in his ear, it says the message is carried instantaneously to Asgard. And then you see Odin's face, and he looks pissed, and it says, "It is not well received."
Yeah, it is not well received at all. Odin's really now. This is another problem. He's really upset. Yeah, this is Ragnarok that's been bumped up on the schedule, right? He's not prepared for it.
Yeah, more Asgardian myth here. Yggdrasil, we see.
Oh, I love that. That's my favorite part of the Asgardian myth. You know, the world tree. You know, Yggdrasil. Mm-hmm. That
love
links
it.
The nine realms. But Billy, you know, this is actually obviously straight from mythology. Hugin and Munin and Geri and Freki were his two wolves, but Hugin and Munin were his ravens who flew all over the nine realms bringing information. So Odin could also be the king of spies, the god of spies, because his ravens are the ideal, you know, platforms for that. That's why he knows all and sees all.
Yeah, like nowadays, he'd have some creep, and he'd have a spy cam. Well, he had ravens. It's the same thing. They were his spy cams, the creep, so he could, like, watch on everybody.
Yeah. Big brother's always watching. The old father's always watching.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. And he slices a branch off of Yggdrasil and throws it into the water there, and then it, like, creates this, I don't know, what would you call
scrying
that?
Like a scrying pool.
Yeah, and you can see all the other gods. You see Zeus and... trying to think if I can make out any other ones
Indra,
when he says
Shiva, Zeus, Brahma, and they're all showing up because he has to quickly call a Zoom meeting here, or like a Skype call here between the gods, because they basically have to decide what to do. So they all decide on, this is very predictable, right, to send their champions to defeat this threat. And so of course Odin summons Thor. Now Thor is very matter of fact about it. He's not afraid. This is just another day as the champion of Asgard, just another day, another dollar. And he shows up, "Father, your ravens beckoned me." And then Odin has the sad look on his face, because he realizes this could be the end of Thor, right, Billy? And he says, "You know, my son, you are Asgard's mightiest warrior. You must join the other pantheons to save us from oblivion." And Thor flies off. And then, you know, Odin is very sad because he just, you know, presided over a funeral. And now he might have to preside over another funeral of his favorite son. Mm-hmm. Right, Billy? So now this is now how high in Odin's esteem Thor is. Listen to this. He thinks when Thor flies away, he says, Asgard will know more sorrow than 10,000 times Nanna's funeral.
Wow.
You know, so Thor is basically 10,000 times more valuable than Nanna, or more loved.
Wow. Nice guy.
Yeah, nice guy. Understandably so. You know, he's Thor's, Odin's direct offspring, but still, damn. So then, yep. Billy, we've got this great splash page. Speak about this. Oh, this is a great page.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, you mentioned earlier the Eternals saga. You really got to see not only Thor and the Eternals, but there were that was the first time that story where I had ever even heard of and seen these other pantheon of gods in the Marvel Universe. Before that, it was just, to me, it was just, you know, Thor and Odin and those guys, and then Zeus and Hercules and them. That was it. I had never heard of all these other ones, and you get to see them in that book. And then you get to see a really cool splash page here, and Thor meets up with, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, at least 6 other gods, and Tawa, the sun champion of the Pueblo people, and then Shango of Africa's Yoruba tribe, and then who else do we got? Apollo of Olympus, and Horus from Egypt, and Indra from the Hindus.
Yeah. Now, this is funny, Billy. Indra from the Hindus, we will learn later that Thor has, in fact, met, and Thor has fought Indra in another guise as Shiva. Uh-huh. You know, so as you remember, at the end of the Eternal Saga, what you just mentioned, the pantheon of gods, basically the end of the Eternal Saga culminated in the death of all the Asgardian gods, right? Because I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, when the Celestials showed up to judge humanity, Odin decided to combat the Celestials by absorbing the life force of all the Asgardian gods, right, Billy? Except for Thor, because Thor was off somewhere else with the Eternals. So he absorbed all the life force of the Asgardians and placed it in the armor of the Destroyer. And then, as the Destroyer, he wielded the Odin sword, and he became like unto a Celestial himself. Right, Billy? So Odin stood alone defending Asgard against the Celestial host. And then, of course, you know, he lost, right? They
he got slapped down.
Obliterated the Destroyer armor, this giant Celestial Destroyer armor, and the Odin sword fell. Thor did his best. He even, like, that's the classic scene where Thor, you know, battles the Celestials, but then he's vanquished, and then, you know, wounded and hurt, Thor picks up the Odin sword, right, Billy? The giant Odin sword, which weighs like thousands of tons, and he hurls it at the Celestial, and then it impales this one Celestial. Do you remember that bit?
Oh, man,
that was great. And then, you know, in order to save, the Celestials just, you know, just ignored Thor, right? That they didn't do much. Yeah. They just absorbed the powers of the Odin sword and then left. After, I think, Gaia showed up with some young gods as a gift to the Celestials, right? They left with these young gods. But the point is, Billy, to resurrect Asgard after the Celestials had destroyed Odin and essentially destroyed the life force of Asgard, Thor had to travel to the other pantheons, and he had to beg them for a piece of their god stuff. A piece of their power, their divine essence. And then they gifted Thor by placing that essence in Mjolnir, right? I think it was.
So Thor, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, he went to all of them. But then when he got to the Hindu pantheon, right, Billy, they refused because Shiva, the god of death, he reasoned that, no, you know, death leads to rebirth and to new life. So new life will spring from Asgard's soil. We don't need to. And then, basically Thor said, okay, I'll fight you for it. I'll fight you for this god stuff that I need. So then he fought Shiva, you know, and then, but now this turns out that this Shiva was in fact Indra, right? The god of storms and in the guise of Shiva, you know? So, I don't exactly know why he did that, but it's mentioned in this issue that Thor has encountered him before.
It is, yeah. I did miss one of them. Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent of the Aztecs. Oh, I missed that dude, too.
Yeah, dude, we recently spoke about a similar character, Quetzalcoatl, on our other podcast. Remember the All-Star Squadron? the World on Fire podcast that we're doing. This is him.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep, here we go.
I like this one guy, you know, you mentioned Shango of the Yoruba tribe on a black thunder cloud. All of these gods have their own modes of transportation. That's probably why Zeus didn't send Hercules, because that's something that Hercules sorely lacks, right, Billy? A viable mode of transportation. We've got this Tawa, the sun champion of the Pueblo peoples. He's on a beam of light. And Quetzalcoatl can fly because he's got a feathered cloak. Thor obviously can fly with Mjolnir. But Apollo's got his sun chariot. And Horus has got his Ankh, you know, the symbol of life that he uses to fly. And then Indra has this, also a chariot that can ride on lightning, which is pretty damn cool.
And yeah, then for real.
They enter this newly shaped hell, you know, this conglomeration of hells, which is now a single realm. And this Shango from the Yoruba tribe, he plants his staff, which is this what would you call it, Billy? This giant flower that he plants.
Like a giant weed.
A weed, maybe, yeah. Or a piece of corn. Well, it could even be a corn stalk.
Yeah, not the good kind of weed, just like a weed in your yard.
Yeah. Not the weed we like. They probably would have.
Chong's weed.
They would have.
It's like a giant weed.
Dude, they would have benefited from weed at this point in time because things are about to.
They should have.
They should have smoked a bowl before they started this battle.
Yes.
But this weed immediately withers when he places it in the soil, and he says this is an evil omen. You know, because he calls it his oft rod. This would have given them, you know, extra. You know, power, extra oomph, much like real weed would have. Or it would have slowed them down. I don't know. It would have made them sleepy and try to make, you know, peace with the god eater. listen to some music.
Yeah, and then listen to Thor. As this is happening, the guy's like, oh no, what's going on here? Thor's response is, forego your ceremony, African. Come, the monster Demogorge lurks somewhere in these dismal shadows. I'm like, listen to this guy.
Yeah, he's making light of this ritual, this battle ritual.
Yeah.
This is not Thor's ritual. He wants to get to the action. He doesn't want to respect the rest of the god guys as the champions, you know, battle rituals. It's mean. But, you know, Thor is kind of like that. He's very, when he meets the pantheons of other gods, he is kind of arrogant. He's not as arrogant, I'd say, as Hercules, you know, but when challenged, he becomes really arrogant. You know what I mean? Yeah. And with rightly so. I mean, Thor's the most powerful of these guys, I'd say. I mean, he lasts till the end. And he didn't even run away like Hela did. But Billy, speaking like about Hela, Hela's, you know, trying to save Ereshkigal from the Demogorge. And she can't. I mean, we see Ereshkigal being swallowed up and Hela holding on to her legs, trying to pull her through. Yeah, and then it doesn't work. Ereshkigal's taken, Hela keeps running, and then she happens upon the group of champions, and she's so tired from this battle against Demogorge, she falls into Thor's arms, and immediately she gets plastered by this ray of from the Demogorge, who just, it just sucks her in, not even through the aperture, just this ray dissolves her into the god energy, which it then feeds on, and Thor is upset. I mean, Hela's his enemy, but they sort of recently came to a mutual understanding or an agreement that they would, you know, be allies, you know, in recent Thor comics. After Hela was defeated, you know, Odin forgave her and Thor sort of made peace with her as well. So he's very upset. I mean, technically in the Marvel, you know, universe, this is Thor's cousin. But in real Norse mythology, Hela would be considered Thor's niece. Or not completely, because Loki's not a blood brother, you know.
Right.
But if you think of Loki as Thor's brother, then Hela being Loki's daughter, essentially in actual mythology, then it would be Thor's niece. But here it's his cousin, right, Billy, in the Marvel universe. So Thor then is the first to strike a blow. He hurls Mjolnir to no effect, right, with no effect at all. So now
it bounces right off of him. He says, murderous beast, but bang right off of him like it's nothing.
Yeah. And now we know the battle's on, right? So these champions, though, Billy, they make a good showing of themselves. If you think about it, the death gods, the death gods with all their power, they did not, you know, have a good showing. They basically got absorbed almost right away. And in fact, their battle was quite pathetic, you know, if you think about the Death Gods here. But these champions, they're actual champions. We see them using their powers, you know, to their utmost, and they're surviving against the Demogorgon, albeit for at least a little while. And then they've got a plan, a strategy too, which seems to be concocted by Thor. What do you think?
Yeah. They actually, like you said, they do pretty good here. Like they have a little battle plan here, and at first it's looking pretty good. And the guy that has that solar disc, he flings it while the Demogorgon is trying to absorb a couple of the gods, and it stops it, which is like, wow, that's pretty cool. But then, who was it? Horus here with his Ankh tries to be like, oh, I'm going to do this, and he gets sucked in like in no time flat.
Yeah, that's Quetzalcoatl with the sun disc, which seems to be able to block. It's kind of like a shield. It's like Captain America's shield that he hurls. It can block the force of the Demogorgon's power ray that it uses to absorb. You know, this almost like a tractor beam-esque, you know, power that it uses. And then we've got Apollo. The sun gods are the first to engage, right, believe, with their power. Yeah. And then Thor takes the thunder gods up into the sky to clear the sky so that they can call down their power, the power of lightning.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got Apollo and who is it? Tawa. You know, the sun champion of the Pueblo people. They've got these, they're bowmen, right? So they're having a bit of an archery competition here. And it seems that Tawa wins because Apollo's arrows merely burn, but Tawa's arrows explode with the force of a supernova, right? And it actually hurts the Demogorgon.
Yeah.
And and also, you know, and then, you know, Horus engages, and they say his Ankh is powerful enough to shatter a small planet, and yet it does nothing against the Demogorgon, and he's the first to be absorbed of the champions, right?
Well, he says, your staff feeds the furnace of my being, so he just makes him even more powerful by doing that to dummy.
Exactly. Now, this is an interesting bit, right? The rest of the sun gods, Apollo, first and foremost among them, he realizes they're going to have to stall the Demogorgon until the thunder gods get here with the cavalry. So Apollo whips out his lyre, right, Billy? And he starts to play a tune because, after all, he's the god of music and the sun.
Oh, yeah.
So he plays a tune that sort of... the music takes the shape of this alluring woman, this dancing girl.
A comely wraith.
Yeah, a comely wraith, as they describe it. And this entrances...
A naked lady.
Yeah, naked lady, basically. Hey, this shows the Demogorgon's a man. You know, he's...
Yeah.
Entranced. But then
too
Thor
horny to think straight.
Exactly. Yeah, they make him horny. And then Thor then breaks the spell, because what does he do? He shows up at that exact moment with the lightning as Apollo's lyre was working on this Demogorgon, this Demogorge, I should say. Thor's lightning shatters the music spell, and even Apollo is like upset. He says, "Asgardian, my music is drowned in thy thunder's roar." And then that's basically the end for poor Quetzalcoatl. He gets absorbed. And then we have another weapon here that seems to hurt the Demogorgon, and that is you know, Shango's throwing iron, which is sort of like, I don't know what you would call it, Billy, like a boomerang, but not really a boomerang. It's like more like a shuriken, you know.
It almost reminds me of some, like, when you've seen, I can't remember what the name of the television show was, but a few years ago over here in the States, there was this television show where I can't remember, like, if it was like there was a host or what, but it went into different, like, cultures and looked at their weaponry. So it would show you stuff from all over the world, like each culture's like ancient weaponry. And I feel like this looks like almost like something Middle Eastern, you know, from over in that section of the world. But yeah, he like throws it and almost hits him right in the face with it, and it stops him. It almost looks like, is that Quetzalcoatl there that he didn't get totally absorbed?
No. He was absorbed already. Tawa and Apollo at the base of the Demogorgon trying to topple him. right at, and it works, right? But then he employs his wings. You know, you can't really topple a guy with the power of flight, right? So, Talwa, at this point in time, poor Quetzalcoatl's gone, and Horus is gone. And then, you know, the Demogorge takes to the sky, dropping Apollo and Talwa and grabbing them, right? Right out of the sky. And then it doesn't even absorb them, right? What does it do, Billy?
Yeah, instead of absorbing through his palms, he just takes them like little Scooby snacks and throws them right in his mouth and eats them.
Yes.
That's great.
Oh, man, it's great. This is a great bit. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Thor and the sky gods now. They're the last remaining bastion here. They're hurling their power. But then the Demogorgon, you know, employs his maw again, his mouth. He sucks in, Shango and Indra. And here we see Indra resembling Shiva, you know, the Shiva Thor fought in, I think it was Thor 301, right, Billy? 301, issue 301.
Yeah.
And, you know, but they get sucked in, and Thor's the last remaining god. And now he's coming up with a plan. Thor's the one coming up with a strategy here. He decides that since the creature cannot be... It's almost like that scene from Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where Drax decides that this creature cannot be penetrated from... you know, without, so he must be killed from within. You know, this is like that scene from Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where Drax jumps into the monster's mouth. Thor does the same. He flies through the aperture in the Demogorgon's hand, in his palm.
His palm.
And he screams, "For Asgard! For life!"
And then all of a sudden, you know, I guess we saw a couple of naked ladies, so now we get naked Thor. For some reason, he flies into this thing and starts getting absorbed, and just at the snap of a fingers, is buck naked.
Yeah, his clothing is the first to be digested. And then he floats in the stomach juices of the Demogorge, right? And we see a lot of gods being, sucked in by this, what he calls papillae, you know, these tentacled, fronds that suck these gods into the, what do you call it, the stomach lining of this Demogorgon, right, Billy? And then Thor's wrapped up in these
creepy
fronds, and he's losing his strength, but he's stronger than most gods. We'll mention again why later. This ties in with Gaia. And then Thor screams no, and he snaps off some of these tentacles, like wrapping themselves around him. And then he walks towards the stomach lining, and he just starts ripping it apart. And so he's basically he's giving the Demogorge a massive hernia, right, Billy? He's ripping apart his stomach lining here. And then the Demogorge's face appears on the wall of his stomach.
Well, a tomb, yeah.
Well, it's a tomb.
It looks like a tomb, though.
A tomb's
like,
face, you're
Mr.
right.
Mr. Clean there. Because it says,
Clean.
He says, "I would have words with you, Godling." And he says, "I am Demogorge. My task is to convert outgrown deities into their essential energies. But your incredible resistance against the metabolic process of my being have reversed the rhythms of my living body. I cannot contain the energy I've consumed. This could not be unless it is not time for you to die."
Yeah, so basically Demogorgon is saying he's just serving destiny really here, because all gods are destined to die. But the fact that Thor is resisting so vehemently proves that the gods still have, you know, enough life in them to, or that the gods should still survive because they've got things to accomplish. And then the Demogorgon realizes that it was awakened prematurely, right, Billy, by this event where the death gods tried to combine their hells. And then it releases all the gods it's recently absorbed. After all, none of them were supposed to be absorbed, at least according to Atum. And so the death gods are restored, the champions are restored, and then the Demogorge changes back into a tomb and fades back into the ether, right? So Billy, now technically he's the end of the gods. He's going to show up again at the end and absorb all the god stuff. And then theoretically spawn a new race of gods, right, Billy? Because that's what happened in the very beginning in the creation myth. You know, he absorbed all the elder gods and then released their energies into the biosphere of Earth for new gods to be born. But it's not that time yet. These gods still serve a purpose, even though they're slowly fading away, according to the death gods who are losing their power, right? And then, you know, the Death Gods say, you know, even though the Demogorge has thwarted our plan, we won't give up. I think it's Pluto, especially Pluto and Mephisto.
Yeah.
And and then, you know, even Ereshkigal, who sort of supported Hela there a little bit, but she also voted for this to happen. She's even vowing to try it again. And then Thor and Apollo just say, we will resist you. We will battle you, you know. Uh-huh. And then, you know, Apollo whips out his lyre again. And he says, now it's basically not the time for fighting again. Now it's time for music, because my music will heal our wounds and soothe the vigor of our spirits. Oh, man, that's so freaky.
Craziness. Like, that makes no sense. Look at the way Mephisto's drawn there, too, in that next panel. He looks like a real devil, man. He looks crazy.
Oh, I love the way they draw that. I love the way Bob Hall renders Mephisto here. And then they all, you know, fade into flame, the Death Gods, and then the champions go their own separate ways, leaving Thor to have a bit of a one-on-one with Hela. Now, Hela fears the wrath of Odin here, because she recently... She was recently pardoned from Odin, you know, by Odin. Now, she's fearing Odin's wrath, but actually Thor says, no, come to Asgard, explain the situation to the Allfather. And it seems Odin already knows everything that transpired. In fact, he you know, rewards Hela with a walk through the Asgardian gardens as her reward for being brave and standing up to the Demogorge. And then we've got this very strange little final panel, right, Billy, where we just see, you know, Thor and Hela waltzing through the garden, just at peace with each other. And Odin just, looming over them.
He says, go then, children, and Hela, before returning to your shadow realm, stroll the glorious gardens of Asgard, drink of the divine mead, and renew yourself in quiet repose.
Basically, get drunk. These are your instructions. Get drunk and wander through the gardens and sleep it off in there.
With my son and then a couple of deer. Hey, maybe I see a fawn there. Maybe it's from the Defenders.
It could be. It could definitely be, you know, that deer. Revenge of the fawn, Billy. Oh, man, that's great. Chandu showing up in Asgard even.
That would be great.
Yeah, this issue was a lot of fun, very strange. I liked it more for the action was fun too, Billy, but I like it more for the beginning, the first part of the issue, which chronicled the birth of the gods in the Marvel comic book universe, I should say. And that part was pretty great. But, you know, it had a bit of a good ending too, a sweet ending there at the end, sentimental ending with Odin just being glad that his children survived. Because after losing Nanna, he didn't want to lose any more gods. And he really feared for Thor's life there. Now, here we get to why I mentioned that the Demogorge, a tomb, is technically Thor's half-brother. We know Gaia, right, Billy, gave birth to a tomb. Through the demiurge impregnating her. But, you know, Odin, he once, you know, had his way with Gaia as well. You know, he seduced Gaia once, and that led to the birth of Thor. So Thor, in the Marvel universe, he, at least the comic book universe, he is the son of Gaia and Odin. That explains his great strength. You know, like, why is Thor so much stronger than the rest of the Asgardian gods? It's because of Gaia being his mother. He has the strength of the earth and the strength of Odin. And then, you know, so Gaia is Thor's mother. Now, this is not obviously the case in actual mythology. In actual mythology, Thor's mother is a lady called Jord, who is a personification of the earth goddess, but she's not Gaia, or she could be seen as a version of Gaia, I guess. But she was a regular sexual partner of Odin. But, of course, that's not the case in the Marvel MCU. Thor is the son of, you know, Odin and Frigga, you know, basically. So Frigga is his mom, and she dies, you know, in Infinity War, right? So, yes. Or no, not Infinity War, in Thor 3. But in Infinity War, he sees her again, and you know, he makes up for that time that he, you know, lost with her. Yeah. But yeah, it happens in Thor 3. She's killed by the Dark Elves. Mm-hmm. So
or two. Maybe that was even the second one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're right, you're right. Sorry, Thor 3 is, you know, obviously a Ragnarok.
God, not
yeah.
that one.
Well, not your favorite, right?
Oh.
You know, that one had so much potential because they put some Kirby in there, you know, and then they squandered it, yeah. But, you know, Renee Russo, yeah, she's the actress who plays Frigga, yeah.
She does a really good job.
Yeah, man, I've always liked her as an actress. And she plays a great... she plays Thor and Loki's mom great. She has even better scenes when she interacts with Loki, I think. And we'll speak more about that later when we have our Shop Talk segment, Billy, when we talk about her and Loki. But... you know, I this is definitely one of my favorite Thor annuals. I was very, you know, glad when you picked it. I was surprised too because I didn't think Thor would show up in our Into the Weird you know, episodes ever. But unless it's, you know, with the Avengers or something, or if he crosses over with a Marvel 2-in-1. But this is suitably weird, so very appropriate for Into the Weird. So Billy, final thoughts on this issue?
Love it. Everybody get out there and get it. I don't know if it's available on, you know, the digital avenues, but it's not an expensive back issue. You know, you can get a mid or low grade copy for probably less than $5. So get out there and grab it.
Well, you can also pick it up as an Epic Collection, Billy. You can read it in the Mighty Thor Epic Collection called A Kingdom Lost. Yeah.
Okay.
It shows up there. It also collects annual number 9, and it has this annual 10 in there. So I that collection, Epic Collection, is worth getting. Reading it in its original form as one of my old back issues, but you know, I do have that Epic Collection as well. You know, I'm not always a big fan of the Epic Collection's recoloring. It's a little bit too bright. You know, you can see. I don't know if I'm not saying some detail gets lost, but sometimes it's a little bit too bright for me. Whereas the Marvel Masterworks, you know, coloring is great, but yeah, this one is... I don't think this one is covered in the Masterworks yet. It'll probably... The Masterworks will only cover that probably with Masterworks Volume 22 or... Yeah, even later. Soon to be collected, though. But a great issue. Yeah, you gotta read it. And we'll head straight on into Mighty Marvel Missteps and Bronze Age Brilliance then, Billy.
Oh, no. No, please.
Okay, Billy, we'll start with you. What are some of your Bronze Age Brilliance and Mighty Marvel Misstep moments?
Well, I mean, overall, I think it's a lot of fun. Good issue, pretty solid, not a lot of missteps, but it was just a little, the whole birth of Atum was kind of weird. Like, that was I think they could have done a better job there of somehow just creating that. Like, that to me was kind of weird and almost a little creepy there with that scene. Like, maybe they should have just told and not shown. Because that was just weird,
yeah,
man.
It does look a little bit creepy, but it was consensual. You know, Gaia sort of...
She initiated it, but it was still weird, man.
Yeah, it looked a little bit strange. Yeah, it looked really, really weird. And then also disturbing, like you say. For me, Billy, it would definitely be the art a little bit. Now, this is not Bob Hall's art I'm criticizing. I think you mentioned that it's fairly consistent, even though it had a host of inkers. I find a few of the panels... you know, inconsistent, but you know, that's in line with the form of the Demogorge, right? He's not,
yeah,
every single panel he looks different because his body's continuously morphing, transmogrifying into something else based on the god energies it absorbs. So it's very much like you mentioned John Carpenter's The Thing. It's never the same shape or form twice. But you know, sometimes it's indistinct and hazy, and it's detailed in one panel and not detailed in the next. And that is definitely, I think, a fault of the inking, maybe because it had like 5 different inkers on it. So, whereas Thor and the gods are fairly consistent, the Demogorge itself, and even those panels in Hell, like the landscape might change, you know, that might just be the way that the weird geography of Hell, this new Hell that they created, works. But you know, I find the scenery very inconsistent. You know, then they're then they're in a cavern, then they're in the mountains, then they're on an open plain, And, you know, it's also not very detailed, you know, the backgrounds.
No.
So, you know, I my misstep would definitely be the art, specifically the inking done on Bob Hall's pencils. And then what about your brilliance, Bronze Age brilliance, your favorite bits, Billy?
Well, for me, it was all about seeing the other pantheon gods, deities, whatever you want to call them. That is great. I love that. Like I said earlier, when I first saw that in the previous Thor story, I thought that was great. And I can't get enough of that kind of stuff. I mean, you wouldn't want it to happen in, you know, every year in an event or something like that, just every once in a while. But it felt like that Thor story, and then now this annual, maybe like 4 years apart or something like that, or 4 years apart. It felt like, you know, like when the Celestials show up, it almost felt like a special thing, you know what I mean? Because it doesn't happen that often. So like that's why I really liked it.
An epic event, yeah. And it's also an apocalyptic event. It's sort of the end of the gods, the balance of their lives hanging. It's basically their existence hanging in the balance, right, Billy? So it's suitably, you know, the stakes are high enough for me to be invested in the story and you know, to know that Thor's not going to easily get out of this one. But even though the way the story is resolved is basically just Thor being stronger than the rest and ripping his stomach lining apart, you know, so that part's a little bit too convenient, you know what I mean, Billy? Like, how could the Demogorgs then intuit that the fact that this one god is resisting so powerfully that means that they should still survive? You know, maybe the better explanation would be that Thor wounded him so badly that he didn't want to admit that he lost, that he's just saying that, okay, now, you know, because, you know, I'm backing off because you're a worthy opponent. but yet he comes up with this whole bit about, oh, this proves that you should survive. I don't know, man. I mean, the rest of the gods, they didn't do much against him, the death gods. Why should that prove that they should survive, you know?
Yeah, maybe they should have stayed dead.
Yeah, but, you know, that's not my misstep, though. My Bronze Age brilliance, of course. My Bronze Age brilliance would be the creation myth and them explaining where the elder gods came from. That's done, I think, elegantly, and it also then leads into how the gods were formed, you know, the more modern pantheons, and how they were formed from the minds of humans, you know, sort of weaving this god stuff with their imaginations together into their respective deities that they worship. I like that bit. That's very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot to like, just a little bit to dislike, right, Billy, of this issue. So, a successful read, I think, on our part, and I enjoyed it. But that's it for our main segment. We'll just take a little bit of a break, and then we'll be back with Shop Talk. So don't go away, listeners.
What have you done in here?
We created a life.
You made her?
Yes. Dead pieces of this. My hands. I created what no man's mind or woman's womb could ever hope to achieve.
Blasphemy!
Blasphemy? Before what god? A god repulsed by the miserable humanity he created in his own image? I will not be shackled by the failures of your god. The only blasphemy is to wallow in insignificance. I have taken refuge in your god's failures, and I have triumphed. There is my creation.
Okay, we're back. What do you have for Shop Talk this week, Billy? I think both of us are going to be talking about the same thing. There's an event coming that I think most of our listeners would like to hear our thoughts on, since this is one of our favorite characters, Doctor Strange being the reason we got into podcasting. Now, what is this event that I'm referring to, Billy?
Well, they're touting the new Doctor Strange being the death of Doctor Strange. And I was like, oh, no, because, you know, it's probably not going to be permanent. But I just don't ever want to see that. I don't know about you, but, you know, close to death, sure, but don't kill him.
Yeah, well, this is definitely going to be Marvel killing off the character of Doctor Strange. Hopefully he's going to come back. This is maybe a cash grab, or it could be an attempt to revitalize the title of Doctor Strange. They're going to give it to someone new. There's going to be a new Sorcerer Supreme. But you know, we'll talk about who it might be later on. I don't even want to speculate, Billy, because I'm not really reading the modern day comics. So, you know, if I had to pick a new Sorcerer Supreme, right, I would pick Brother Voodoo, because he's my next favorite magician-like character. I'd even mm-hmm. be fine if it was Shaman, but they're probably going to pick a younger character, a newly, you know, created younger character, maybe one of the Strange Academy kids. I don't know. I don't even mm-hmm. want to actually think about it because it depresses me. But yeah, basically what's going to happen is, you know, Marvel is going to release a 5-issue miniseries. Mm-hmm. And it's the final chapter in Stephen Strange's life. I think the writer is going to be Jed McKay, and the art is going to be done by Lee Garbett. And yeah, it's going to be the end of Doctor Strange. We don't know a lot more than that, but I'm upset about it. I've spoken to one of our mutuals, you know, about this on Twitter. You know, Sorceress Strange, otherwise known as Lady Strange. You know, she's one of the more rabid mm-hmm. Doctor Strange fanatics out there, similar to Peter from the Sanctum Sanctorum. I've yet to listen to what Peter wants to say about this, but Lady Strange is very upset about this, you know, Billy, and she says that, you know, it's definitely going to be temporary, but if it sells well, then they might keep this new Doctor Strange around, you know, the new Sorcerer Supreme, whoever it's going to be. So, you know, Marvel's hoping it would sell well. I'm hoping it won't, because I want the original Stephen Strange back. But will they bring him back? You know, Billy, they will eventually, but it might be after like 5 or even 10 years. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's not that long. So no. I'm not, you know, obviously chuffed by this at all. I'm very upset about it. And why do they have to do that with characters, you know? And then even tease it. If it happens as a surprise, you know, that would be shocking. But it wouldn't be shocking for me, because I wouldn't be reading the modern comic. know? I would pick it up later if I heard, oh man, Doctor Strange died in the comic. But now they're making this whole event out of it. They're teasing it. We know it's going to happen. Now we're just wondering why it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going to have to see why. I'm probably going to have to pick up some of the comics to understand how it happened and speak about it on a future episode, right, Billy? But I don't want to buy it. Man. You know, I had the same reaction when they killed off Nightcrawler, you know, and then they brought Nightcrawler back eventually, but he was gone for a good 5-year stretch. You know, he's my favorite X-Man. And, they killed him off like about 10 years ago. I was very upset about that. They brought him back. But that was a surprise death. You know, so I think that had more impact. You know, this one is, we know it's coming. So that already takes away most of the, you know, the impact for me. But it's definitely going to sell well, right, Billy? That's what Marvel's doing this for. It's just a cash grab.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that seems to be all they really know how to do anymore.
Yeah. But let's go towards something more positive, Billy. I recently... You know, this is a Shop Talk segment I have to include, because I've been loving the Disney Plus. You know, we've spoken about WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier. Both of those shows were great. Now, I watched the first episode of Loki on Disney Plus. Now, this is probably going to be my favorite series of the newly released Marvel shows. That first episode was amazing. Really, it blew me away. Now, a lot of people don't like it, actually. They say it was boring, the setup was too slow, you know, the lead in to the events that are eventually going to happen. But I disagree. The world that Loki finds him in, you know, after he escaped using the Tesseract, the space stone, at the end of Marvel's Infinity War, he ends up in a whole new environment that changes the stakes completely. You know, it changes the parameters of what we thought the Marvel universe contains completely. And I'm loving it. It has a lot. You might have seen the trailer. Have you, Billy, seen the trailer to Loki?
I did. Yeah, it looked very like there's going to be a lot going on.
Basically, it's Loki, you know, jumping through the multiverse, you know, trying to correct wrongs at the behest of this, the timekeepers, who are the beings who are in charge of maintaining the proper timeline. you know, so I'm not going to spoil any more than that, but they're basically trying to, you know, Loki's a criminal in their time court, and rather than sentencing him, they offer him a deal. They want him to be their sort of agent, you know, their agent, their multiversal agent to correct these mistakes in the timeline. But there's more to it than that, you know. There's something that's revealed that I don't want to spoil now. I'm just going to say, watch it if you can. And to the listeners out there who've already watched it, I'm hoping you enjoyed it as much as I did. I know a lot of people, you know, it's polarizing, this one. It's not as clear-cut as WandaVision or Falcon and Winter Soldier, which everybody universally seemed to like. You know, a lot of people have said they actually don't like this first episode of Loki. I think, you know, they're doing something completely new with the character. And you've got Tom Hiddleston. He's very charismatic. Great personality, fantastic actor. He's firmly in his Loki guise here. And Owen Wilson's there. I'm an Owen Wilson kind of fan. I like him when he shows up, you know. He's there. So far, what's not to like? Come on, this you've got Tom Hiddleston back as Loki. A lot of funny scenes, but also some, scenes where you know that, oh, damn, the doo-doo's going to hit the fan. If things go south, because the stakes are even higher than when Thanos had the Infinity Gauntlet. That's how high the stakes go here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so interesting that Loki is wrapped up in these events. So I'm going to be talking more about, you know, subsequent episodes, spoiler free, of course, right, Billy? But I'm looking forward to watching the rest. So, other than that, you know, Billy, nothing else for Shop Talk. I haven't been to my LCS lately. It's been, you know, we're on lockdown here too in Taipei. Recent surge in coronavirus cases. Everybody's getting vaccinated, but, you know, they're playing it safe. So, you know, comic book stores are closed. So, you know, I'm just buying digital and ordering stuff over Amazon. That's what I've been doing. So but I do have something for recommendations of Ragador later, which I've been reading digitally, which I'll recommend. But that's the only shop talk I have from my neck of the woods. Have you since, you know, lockdown's been lifted in your part of where you are, Billy? Have you been going to comic book stores and like you used to before, or are you still firmly just buying off of eBay or what are you doing?
I actually haven't bought anything in a few months here, probably at least 2 months, and then with just being on vacation and work's getting crazy, I haven't had a chance. But I'm definitely, you know, over the summer here gonna hit two or three shops that are not too terribly far away from me, you know, and grab a couple things here and there. Gotta wait for a sale though, because man, prices, they just the more Marvel makes these movies and Disney shows and stuff like that, the back issue market has gone up significantly in the past like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I wished I had some back issues that I could buy over here. You know, the comic stores here, they only stock new issues, because back issues just, it's not worth keeping around for them. But you know, I try to go once a month to the local LCS here, and then they have my call order ready for me, like 4 weeks worth of comics. But it's not a lot. It's probably about 10 comics, you know, that I pick up a month, based on certain things I've got in my call order. But, you know, sometimes I get them at a discount, you know, Billy, because the owner of the store, he knows that, you know, the American comics are not selling well here in Taipei. So he will sometimes, you know, have these discounts or, you know, sales going on. And then I benefit from that, because he wants to get rid of the stock. Mm-hmm. And it's not selling. So then he offers it up to me at a discount. So I buy it. So I'm not spending as much as I would have. Digital though is very expensive these days. They're basically the same price as a regular floppy, you know, as an issue.
Wow.
So, you know, if I do buy digital, which is very seldom, you know, I normally just buy digital for podcasting, you know, so that I can have it on the iPad ready to talk about. But I'll wait 6 months and I wait for a single issue to go down to $1.99 rather than $3.99 or $4.99, which it usually is. It's just very pricey. But, you know, I'm still enjoying some of the stuff, especially the independents that I'm reading. The only Marvel comic that I'm collecting at the moment. Well, actually, I'm collecting two, but I'm not going to spoil the one that I'm going to mention in Recommendations of Ragador. But basically, my call order consists of Immortal Hulk, which I'm picking up regularly, right, Billy? And then, you know, I've got a couple of Image comics, and I've only got the one DC comic which I'm picking up, which is the Crime Syndicate, which I mentioned previously. So, you know, I'm not picking up a lot at all. Right. But, you know, that's basically it for Shop Talk. We're going to take another bit of a break, and then we'll be back with the Recommendations of Ragador. So let's hear what our, well, would you call him our sponsor? I doubt it. Ragador is our sponsor, but let's listen to what his BFF Dormammu has to say. So don't go away, listeners. We'll be right back.
Greetings, pathetic human slime. This is Dormammu hijacking your airwaves with his oh-so-sonorous voice. For once, I'm in quite a jolly mood, as I've just returned from my local LCS, Faultine Flame Comics, with some riveting titles. The newest issue of Immortal Hulk, for instance. The new Gamma Flight limited series. And, most importantly, the news that my hated foe, Stephen Strange, is scheduled to meet his demise and will soon be wiped from the pages of Marvel forever. And I have it on good authority from a Marvel intern, who is in fact a mindless one under deep cover, that I am first among the candidates to be considered to step up as the new Sorcerer Supreme. Of course, I'll turn it down. Dormammu does not covet such a lowly role, but I might hand it off to my son Doyle. But only if he returns to my fold. Then my monopoly of the Marvel Magical Universe will be complete. And if a last-minute decision changes the path of fate, well then, woe unto the people of Earth, especially Marvel Editorial, for they will feel my unbridled wrath.
All right, we're back with the Recommendations of Ragador. Billy, as ever, I'll let you go first. What do you have for us this week?
Okay, so I went with a really easy one here since we were talking about that Thor annual. I have a trade, The Mighty Thor Ragnarok, and it's Roy Thomas, John Buscema, and Tom Palmer. So anybody that's into classic, you know, Bronze Age Thor, this is the trade for you. I think it's 2011 it came out. It's a thinner trade. I think it only has maybe 7 issues. Thor 272 to 278, but it's basically, you know, Loki going nuts and Baldur getting killed and Ragnarok happening. But there's a little bit of a twist in there. There's a TV show kind of in Asgard being filmed here.
Thor.
But it's really, really cool. Yeah,
I like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. Thor brought some people up to Asgard to film, mm-hmm. and then Billy, correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I haven't read this in a while, but doesn't one of them I think is the cameraman, he falls in love with mm-hmm. Thor's lady Sif, and then mm-hmm. He makes a deal with, who is it, with Loki? Or to become the real Thor, the God of Thunder from myth. Mm-hmm. Now, what the hell does that mean, the mm-hmm. real Thor? But he gets Thor's belt of strength and his gauntlets, and he grabs Mjolnir from mm-hmm. Thor. And havoc ensues. So this camera guy messes up everything in order to get mm-hmm. Lady Sif to fall for him. It's ridiculous, but it's so much fun.
But it's crazy good, because you see, you know, it's not exactly like the mythological Ragnarok, but you do get to see some cool stuff that you don't see really in any other books, like the Midgard serpent going crazy. And then you see Hela leading these legions against, you know, Asgard, and you see the trolls, and you see, oh, the giant wolf. What the heck is his name?
Fenrir.
Yeah, Fenrir Wolf. So you get to see some, you know, cool characters from the mythology that you don't get to see very often in the Thor book. So that's really super cool. So, and a tragic ending to it as well. So good stuff. And I mean, like I said, Roy Thomas, John Buscema, Tom Palmer, you cannot go wrong. And this is actually what leads right. This is the lead up to the Eternal Saga too. So this is, you know, definitely required reading.
It is required reading. It's one of my favorite Thor stories. You know, my favorite would probably be, you know, the Simonson run, you know, the many stories in the Simonson run. Beta Ray Bill, that the beginning, you know, many people love it. That's not my favorite. I like the Surtur, you know, storyline. But you know, I also love the Eternal Saga. Ragnarok though is high on the list, right, Billy? It's right up there with some of my favorite Thor stories. So, yeah, I agree with you. Great recommendation. And I'll put the image and the link to where you can, you know, see that on our sinkintotheweird.com blog. So, Billy, I have something similar. It's not a Thor recommendation, but it's definitely something in the vein of Thor, or more like, I should say, it's in the vein of Conan. And this is Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor's new series, The Invincible Red Sonja, from Dynamite Entertainment, from Dynamite Comics. Okay, you know there's a new Red Sonja comic out, and the art is by Moritat. Do you know the artist Moritat, Billy?
I do not.
He's amazing. Okay, he first cut his teeth on the Elephant Men series over at Image Comics. You know, have you ever read Elephant Men? It's beautiful art. Mm-mm. It's amazing art.
I've seen that, yeah. What's the guy's name that does that one?
I forgot the writer now of Elephant Man. Damn. Yeah,
the guy's a super nice guy too. I can't think of his name either, but I've, you know, had interactions with him online before, and he's a very, very nice guy. His name's just blowing my mind here. Let me
also try to remember. Anyway, this Moritat guy, you know, he's a great artist. I also loved his All-Star Western that he did, you know, for DC, you know, the DC New 52. They launched Jonah Hex in the DC universe again. It was set in Gotham City, you know, in the 19th century, and Jonah Hex was rounding up criminals there, and Marta did the art on that. He's a great penciler. So you've got a fantastic creative team. And then, you know, Billy, Red Sonja has never been this much fun, man. I'm telling you, Palmiotti and Amanda Connor writing. Normally, Amanda Connor, you associate her with art, but she's a damn fine writer, especially when paired with her husband, Jimmy. And the story kicks off, you know, she's a buccaneer at this point in time. She's on the high seas. She's got adventures. She fights these murderous sirens. Yeah, it's great. And Marta draws Red Sonja very alluringly, but not disrespectfully so. You know, she's more of a warrior than she is a sex symbol, I think. So in this comic, and the humor is there. You know, Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, they're known for their sense of humor. You know, they wrote Harley Quinn, they wrote the Power Girl series over at DC, and even one of the previous recommendations of Ragador that I recommended, the Pro with Garth Ennis, Amanda Connor did that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh man, they're amazing. So, you know, I'd say pick up the Red Sonja series because it's worth it. You know, it's you and I, Billy, we're going to be talking about Red Sonja soon on our on our Patreon episodes, which we've got running. We're doing Radio Free Hyboria over there, so you know we're going to be incorporating her into our show there after we've spoken a bit about Conan and Kull. Because, you know, the early Red Sonja at Marvel, it was Frank Thorne, you know, on art. That was pretty damn good. Roy Thomas writing.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to talk about her more. But pick up this new series if you can. It's definitely a fun time. And I've always loved Red Sonja. I think she's one of my favorite characters in comics. I mean, I like these kind of, you know, sword and sorcery type fantasy style heroines. Like Valkyrie over at The Defenders. You know, she's one of my favorite female characters. And then Red Sonja being the other one. And then She-Hulk. Okay, but She-Hulk's got nothing to do with... But she's also this strong type of Xena, you know, figure. And I find the woman like that very attractive.
mm-hmm. But, oh, yes.
You know, so that's my recommendations of Ragador. Other than that, Billy, nothing much to report. I did pick up a couple of other comics, but I want to talk about that on our other show, World on Fire, because they're more DC-related mm-hmm. stuff related to the All-Star Squadron. So I'm going to leave that for cool. that show. But, you know, that's a good segue for us to mention to the listeners. If you do want to listen to some more comic book goodness, why don't you check out our other show, which is A World on Fire, an All-Star Squadron podcast. And I'm going to be recommending some books over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just covered, you know, a big 5-issue crossover between All-Star Squadron and the Justice League. So that was a 2.5 hours of DC goodness right there. And then you and I have something really big cooking behind the scenes, but we're going to keep that a secret for now.
Oh, yeah, that's more Long Box of Darkness and magazines and monsters related, right, Billy? So we'll...
Well, that too, but we're going to be having a conversation... Probably not until August, but that'll be really high on a lot of people's radar.
I know what you're referring to. Okay, that is definitely uh-huh. All-Star Squadron related. That's pretty big. Yeah, it's even bigger than I think our Patreon launched. Bigger than our crossover plans for Long Box of Darkness and magazines and monsters. Yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah, we might actually climax during that episode, so get ready, people.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be the high point of my podcasting career. Okay, enough mm-hmm. teasing the listeners with maybes.
Shenanigans.
That's it for our recommendations of Ragador. I'm going to play a quick mm-hmm. promo of a sister show here, but after the promo, we'll be back to wrap up the show with our Allies of Agamotto. We've got an email to read. And then we'll say our goodbyes. But stay tuned, listeners. We're not done yet. So listen to this promo and listen to the show. You might enjoy it.
Between the golden age of Atlantis and the rise of recorded history, there were ages undreamed of. Hither came heroes and villains possessing swords and magic, whose deeds became tales and legends. I have come to relate these sagas. Let me tell you of the days of high adventure. Days of High Adventure, a new podcast discussing a variety of comics that fall into the fantasy or sword and sorcery genre. Available on most podcast services and Anchor FM.
All right, Billy, that's it for this week's Into the Weird. Now, we've got a little bit of an mm-hmm. Allies of Agamotto here. We've got no new iTunes reviews, so there's no new Bronze Age alter egos that I can ascribe to a five-star reviewer. But I would invite any of you who want to maybe get a Bronze Age moniker from us to write us a review. But be honest, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't give us a 5-star review, that's fine. If you give us a 4-star review, I'll still give you a Bronze Age moniker. Be honest, you know, if there are improvements to Into the Weird that you feel we could make, mention that in the review. Or, you know, obviously you can just do it the usual way and send us an email at, you know, sinkintotheweird@gmail.com. We'll also, you know, take your advice to heart. But, you know, leave an iTunes review if you can. That helps the show a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Billy, before I plug our Patreon again, I want to read this email that we got from a guy called Rick Sheffield. Mm-hmm. I might have mentioned him before, but I don't think I read his email in its entirety, you know, and I'm going to do so now. Rick's a listener who listened to some of the early episodes of Into the Weird. So he started at the beginning. He's probably mm-hmm. caught up now, but I'm not sure about that, though. He firmly still just, at the time of sending this email, he just listened to the episodes I did with Grant. So he addressed mm-hmm. the email to Grant and Herman. Mm-hmm. And he said, Silver and Bronze, my era. I have recently discovered your Into the Weird podcast, and as a Marvel comic reader from the 60s onwards, I found it very enjoyable. Listening to the first two podcasts took me back to the 60s and early 70s when Doctor Strange episodes were created. I had very recently just read the complete Lee Ditko run, so I was able to visualize the events as you discussed them. I have also read and still have some of the Doctor Strange stories you covered in the second podcast, and enjoyed your comments on Sons of Satanish, Juggernaut, Strange's Visual Change, etc., drawn wonderfully by Gene Colan. I find the podcast to be nicely organized with the main topic, followed by bits of brilliance, and then I really like Get Off My Lawn. Ooh, Billy, we need to bring that back, right? Lots of listeners clamoring.
Yeah, we need to bring that back.
Yeah. And then he ends the email by saying, looking forward to listening to more podcasts covering The Defenders, Man-Wolf, Warlock, Man-Thing, and many others from the Bronze Age. Now, Billy, Rick he's let us know what he wants there, and I think we should comply. You and I, we still have to work Man-Wolf and Warlock into the weir.
Oh, yeah. Warlock, absolutely. That'll be we'll have to rush that to the front of the line, because the Jim Starlin stuff is absolutely insane. And I bought a trade a little while ago that has the complete collection of Jim Starlin, Warlock, and the Bronze Age, and it's ridiculous. It's crazy.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's some of my favorite stories of all time. Even the Gil Kane stuff, you know, from the Warlock Masterworks number one, you know, that stuff's great too. In fact, here's a bit of trivia, Into the Weird trivia for you guys. Grant and I, we used to, before we started Into the Weird, we had a bit of a trial run with a podcast that Grant and I came up with together called the Crack-a-Thoom Retro Comic Book Review. And Billy, basically the conceit of this podcast was, we would only be talking about lightning-based characters, right? So we would, because it's the Crack-a-Thoom podcast, we would be reviewing old comics of Thor, you know, since he's a lightning-based character. The Flash, Captain Marvel, Shazam, you know, those kind of characters. And then we would also be doing, of course, Adam Warlock. Why would we be doing Warlock? Because he had a lightning symbol, you know, on his chest. You know, and he didn't have any lightning-based powers, but obviously the lightning symbol stood for, you know, rebirth. If you think about lightning galvanizing like the Frankenstein monster, or causing, like we mentioned earlier, maybe earlier primordial earth, you know, the energy for life was provided by possibly lightning strikes. It's just the theory, you know, like it's called abiogenesis, you know, might have been jump-started. Life might have been jump-started through, you know, electricity. So, you know, all of that. And that's why he has this lightning symbol. And Grant and I worked that into a show. We went as far as recording an episode where we discussed, you know, Warlock in the Bronze Age. And that is weird enough for Into the Weird, Billy, because if you think about it, Warlock is born from a floating giant cosmic space turd. And the high evolutionary, you know, the high evolutionary, you know, finds him drifting like that in space. This is, of course.
You know what?
Yeah.
Do you still have that file?
Unfortunately, I don't. Yeah, I don't. I lost it. You wanted us to release that file.
yeah. I was thinking next time we're in a pinch, you know, or we need to get something out there. That sounds like a good one to throw out there. People would like that.
Oh, that was a good one. No, I think that was early days when I didn't even use GarageBand to record it. I recorded us directly to Podbean. You know, with Podbean's recording function. So the sound was horrible. You know, it was Grant and me on our cell phones. It was very much a trial run. That's why we never really released it. But that happened. So interesting. A bit of Into the Weird history there for you folks. Anyway, we got to talk about that, Billy. And we got to talk Man-Wolf. When George Perez came on Man-Wolf, early Man-Wolf was also Gil Kane. I didn't mind that so much because I love Gil Kane drawing monsters. And then, of course, Man-Wolf is also in line with our weird aesthetic because those comics were freaky as hell. So
yeah, I think the late lamented David Anthony Kraft wrote a lot of those.
Yes, he did. He recently passed away, and rest in peace, David. Yeah. We got to talk about that, Billy. And we can also work in David Anthony Kraft's a bit of a memoriam. In memoriam to him in an episode like that. So thanks for the feedback, Rick. You've given us some great ideas. We're going to have to get back to covering some Defenders. We'll do Man-Thing again in the future for sure. Yeah. But Man-Wolf and Warlock, we still have to get to them, and we're going to, and that's going to happen soon. Mm-hmm. We're going to move that up the queue. Mm-hmm. So other than that, Billy, that's it for our Allies of Agamotto. I'm going to quickly mention our Patreon. As you might know, listeners, we launched a Patreon recently where we offer three brand new shows. We've got two subscribers already, right, Billy, for our Patreon. We've got Ryan Daly from the Fire and Water Network, friend of the show. He needs no introduction. The guy's a legend. He's got numerous shows under his belt, and I'm sure many more to come. Thanks, Ryan. He signed up for our $5 tier. And then we've got, of course, one of our new friends on Twitter, but he's actually an old friend of the show. He's been listening to the show a while. And this is someone who signed up from the $10 tier, a guitarist of note. And his name is Mr. Brian Hansen. So, Brian, thank you, man. He's been on Twitter recently. He created an account. He's a comic book fan. And we just want to thank Ryan and Brian. The rhyme is completely unintentional. And we'd like to invite you listeners to at least check it out. We understand, you know, this is not the best time to be spending money, but you'll really be helping out the show. You know, Billy, you and I have got things to worry about, like hosting fees, and we've got we're running the website, you know, which costs money as well. So we're trying to make a go of podcasting more regularly. So we've committed to two Into the Weird episodes a month that everybody can listen to. It's still our regular show, available for free. But if you want to support Into the Weird further, you can go to our Patreon and you can select one of the tiers. Right, Billy? The first tier is simply just a $1 tier where you just support us with, you know, just a dollar. And it does go a long way. And then the second tier is our $5 tier, which gives you access to our three bonus episodes. Every month we'll release three episodes. Now, Billy, I'm going to let you talk on it. What are some of our shows that we're talking about?
So, yeah, every month, you know, at the first of the month there, we're going to release three episodes, like you said. And you already had mentioned the one, which is Radio Free Hyboria, which is going to be us talking about Conan and Kull. And then, like you said, eventually we'll talk about, you know, people like even maybe Solomon Kane and Red Sonja and stuff like that. So all the basically Robert E. Howard stuff that Marvel got their hands on. And then another one that's a lot of fun is House of Licensed Ideas. So you and I are going to talk about all sorts of crazy stuff that Marvel got the license for in the Bronze Age and early Copper Age there. And right now we're rolling with Godzilla, Micronauts, and then, you know, an all-time favorite for a lot of people, ROM. So I know there's a lot of ROM fans out there. So if you want to hear us talk about ROM, you gotta that's the level for you. You know, you can do that one. And then another fun one too that I both love is Dragons and Jive. So the, you know, martial arts and blaxploitation era there that just exploded in the Bronze Age with, you know, not just with Marvel but even in cinema. You know, we're talking about that. So Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and then of course your favorite, Shang-Chi.
Yeah, the master of Kung Fu. So, you know, we're having a blast recording those episodes, right, Billy? The second batch of episodes, which is episode 2, right, of all three of those shows, is in the can. It's going to be released in the beginning of July. And so if you sign up for that, you'll have basically two episodes to listen to so far of each of those shows. So that'll total six new episodes. And more's coming. You know, we're going to keep recording that, keep uploading it onto the Patreon. So if you want some extra content, extra Into the Weird, please check out the Patreon and you will really, really appreciate it. And of course, if you sign up for the higher tier, which is $10, we're not going to go higher than that, right, Billy? $10 is going to be our highest tier.
Yeah.
You'll get some added incentives. You know, you can engage with us more on the Patreon site. You'll get some rewards. You'll get a care package sent to you with comics after 3 months at that tier. You'll also get a Bronze Age alter ego. If you've already received one, if you're one of our 5-star iTunes reviewer, I will come up with another one for you, which I'll send along to you. And, you know, so many other rewards that we're still going to be adding to the tiers. So we're hoping you would check out Into the Weird on Patreon. You can do so at www.patreon.com/Into the Weird. And then, Billy, if they want to send feedback, they can reach us, as I mentioned earlier, at sinkintotheweird@gmail.com. You can also check out our sinkintotheweird.com website, where I'll be posting a podcast addendum I'll have that lighthouse pic of yours up there and images from the comic we discussed, the Thor Annual number 10, as well as our recommendations of Ragador. And then, Billy, where can they reach you online?
That would be at BillyD_Licious on Twitter. So definitely check me out there. That's where I'm spending a ton of time. I don't know. Nothing else social media-wise really gets me going. The Twitter is a lot of fun. You know, yeah, every once in a while there's some craziness, like, you know, Batman laying the pipe with whoever comics or whatever. But for the most part, it's cool, fun, positive, and good group of people out there. So love Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter's where we're at most of the time. I do have an Instagram account for Into the Weird, but, you know, I'm not very active. I'll try to be more active over there. But I find Twitter's more engaging, right, Billy, with our host of friends over there. And, you know, you can find the show there as well. We're at Into Weird on Twitter. You can also follow me at Dark Longbox. And I've recently started uploading old Dark Long Box of Darkness episodes again, Billy. This might be annoying to some subscribers because I basically lost my feed for a while there. All I can say is when you're importing your feed from a previous host to a new host, you shouldn't, well, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you shouldn't have a VPN running at the same time, because what that does is, well, what that seemed to have done to me is it copied my feed and changed my feed so that I keep my old subscribers. Thank heavens for that. But it doesn't import my previous shows. So I have to now, on my new platform, on the new host, upload all the old shows again. And I'm doing this one by one. I can't upload it in a huge batch because I have to make some changes according to the new host specifications, you know, like, so you have to upload it singly, you know, one by one. And that is now causing a lot of shows to show up daily on people's feeds. Like, oh, Into the Weird's got a new episode. Sorry, Long Box of Darkness has a new episode. Oh, no, this is one of the old episodes showing up again. But the good news is I'll have a new episode, which I already recorded, available on the weekend of the 26th of June. You know, that's when the new season 2 of Long Box of Darkness starts. And you and I, Billy, we're going to have a crossover with your podcast, Magazines and Monsters, which we're planning. Yeah. I'm not going to spoil exactly what we're going to be crossovering because we're keeping that a secret for now. But we're going to have a huge crossover. And then, you know, because I've relaunched, you know, Long Box of Darkness as a podcast, I've also restarted the blog. So I'm blogging again over at darklongbox.com. You know, so the listeners can also check that out. And Billy, then I quickly want to plug your show, Magazines and Monsters. You and I recently did an episode on one of our favorite old Christopher Lee movies, City of the Dead. And I would advise, you know, listeners to check out the Magazines and Monsters podcast. And also, Billy, your blog, Magazines and Monsters. You recently posted some, you know, a post about unknown worlds of science fiction again, which I'm loving. That was a good post.
Yeah, at this point, all six of the regular issues are up there, and there's only one left to go. They did a giant size or annual or something they call it. I think it was a giant size they called it at the end there. And then that's it for those. But yeah, I really wanted to go through those because those are a lot of fun. There's some really good material in there, like, you know, Harlan Ellison. And like I just messaged you the other day and said about Michael Moorcock. You know, there's an adaptation in there. Yeah, so good stuff. Really good stuff.
I'm enjoying that, Billy. So keep doing that and I'll keep reading them. So engage with us there, listeners, if you want to see some extra content. But for now, that's very much it for this episode of Into the Weird. I'll leave you with a little bit of a message. Stay freaky, stay cool, stay bizarre, and keep reading weird comics because weird is where it's at. That's what we enjoy. Being weird these days is a trend. I hope it's not going to become a fad that's going to become, you know, tiresome too soon. But it hasn't since the 70s, right, Billy? So, we'll keep the weirdness flowing if you keep listening to us, and we'll be there for you. So thanks again for supporting us and listening to Into the Weird. We'll be back with another show in 2 weeks, but check out our Patreon for more goodness. And, you know, stay safe. Even though the coronavirus is gone, you know, there's still other ills in the world that we need to take care of. So, we hope you folks are there for the next episode and we'll be there for you as well. So, Billy, with that, it's bye from me.
All right, stay weird, everybody.
Take it easy, folks. Bye-bye.